Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Going Old School Show live on blogtalkradio.com. It is Wednesday, April 5th of the year 2023, and it is our episode number 77 in about a little over a year, but we won't get historic now because we got a lot to cover in the next 60 minutes. Chips and Joe here for you. Topics on the table tonight, we got to touch base later on with my co-host on the Patriots. The ongoing saga between Bill Belichick and Mac Jones continues for the New England Patriots. Gee, because guys, get a room and hash this out. We'll pontificate a little later on towards the end of the show. Major League Baseball, locally, the Pittsburgh Pirates come into Fenway Park and do their best mop-and-glow impersonation at the hands of the Boston Red Sox. We'll take you there. We'll recap, and we'll see what's going on with this bumbling Red Sox team. But it is hockey season. And as we do each and every Wednesday here on the Going Old School Show, I like to call him our old school podcast NHL insider. And he joins us here once again. He is Ryan DeResta. Ryan, John and Joe here for you. Thanks for your time, man. How's everything?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Everything's good over here. Got some good games going on tonight. Got a really big one going on 7:30. We got that nice Western Conference wild card spot game.
Yeah.
Flames, I don't know. They might take it.
Tampa Bay and the Rangers tonight, right, too?
Yeah, Tampa Bay and Rangers.
That's the one I'm going to be looking at. We're going to talk about those teams after. But, Ryan, got to set off with the hometown Bruins. And I know they're not saying it, but your fans, and we've talked about it, they've got to be chomping at the bit to get this season in the rearview mirror and go on to the playoffs, right, with five games left. Everything's gone pretty much according to plan, maybe better than that with 60 wins, but let's get going and get the playoffs started. Is that in these players' minds and the coaches as well?
Oh, they've been ready for about a month now. They just want this season to be over, and they want that first round to just get started already.
So, Ryan, you know, look, everything's been going good for the Bruins, but let's scratch underneath the surface and a true Boston fan that me being – how's the injury report? Because it seems like Marchand, Krejci, all few other guys battling nagging injuries. But how nagging are they? Are they something to be worried about?
Well, Hall came back to practice today. He wasn't in a no-contact jersey, so he's a full participant. And I think Montgomery was just talking recently about the possibility of him returning tomorrow. But that's being a little hopeful. As far as Marchand, I think they're just getting him a little bit of rest. I think he could be a game time decision as well. They might just sit him out for that one and just get him going for the last three. And Foligno and Forbert are both still progressing. Neither one of them have touched the ice yet. So he's hoping that they're going to be ready for the first round.
Ryan DeResta joined us on the Old School Podcast. Ryan, let's talk about Taylor Hall. And their rumors are out there. I don't know how close you are to the situation, but are the Bruins kind of circumventing the salary cap for the postseason, much like Tampa Bay did a few years ago?
Yeah, I think they're just holding off spots, especially with the Marchand play right now. We need him out there, but I think he's one of those guys. You give him a couple days of rest, let him start the last game, and just let him fly out there. They just got to rest these guys. They got to fall into that salary cap too. So some of these guys that they might need in the playoffs, they're trying to get them a little ice time now, get them comfortable with the lines they may be on, just in case there might be, you know, knock on wood, you don't want it, but another injury comes up. You want these guys to be kind of in the circuit with the rest of the team.
You know, you say you circumvent the salary cap. Tampa Bay wrote the book on that because Kucherov, their best player, didn't play three quarters of the year and all of a sudden came back playoff time with his, what, $8, $9 million salary. So, I mean, they're not doing reinventing the wheel on this one. They're just, you know, using the rules to their advantage.
Yeah, they're using the rules, but I think they're going about it the right way, especially with the big name guys that they have out right now. it's better to just take it easy. And, you know, if you take advantage of the salary cap, then you might as well do it. If you want these guys who are going to be key players healthy in the playoffs, you might as well rest them up now.
Ryan, could the reemergence of Taylor Hall, even in the postseason, disrupt whatever chemistry this team has? Or are we beyond saying, you know, that you throw another fish into that bowl, everything will still be the same?
Yeah, I don't think it's really going to mess with the chemistry. Even on Sunday, Montgomery was jambling lines around. So I think getting Hall back in there, he's going to get them amped up. It's going to make that third line crazy. He was actually skating today with Coyle and Bertuzzi, which would be a pretty sick line to see out there. I don't think we've seen that yet. We definitely haven't, because he hasn't been back since the trade happened. So I think the shuffle that Montgomery has planned up is going to work out for the team no matter what players are out there.
So it looks like, you know, as bad as Don Sweeney is at drafting, it seems like he pulled another one out of his hat with Dmitry Orlov. It seems like he got a good deal out of that one. What's your opinion on that, Ryan?
I think if it was a sign for him to pick him up and then sign him after the season, it's a great move. But if it's going to be a rental, I think that, you know, they're going to let one slip away that they could have held on to. So depending on how he handles the situation and, you know, we get an extension out of him, I say it's a good deal.
Ryan, let's talk about Brad. And, you know, he with the double hip surgery last offseason, came back quicker than I thought, looked really good. Are we seeing now him now being a little tired? And should they be resting him a little more, in your opinion, or what's his status on him? And then we're looking at Brad Marchand. It's maybe the Brad Marchand we're going to see for the near future. He's been around a few years. He's not the guy to build the team around anymore, I don't think, or not the core pieces. But what's your take on him, and what's your prognosis for the rest for the last five games, and how do you see Brad Marchand fitting in the playoffs?
I think they might not play him tomorrow night, if they're going to see how things go. But also you have to keep in mind, the longer that you're keeping someone out and they got a couple aches, you know, in the hips from the hip surgery, the longer you're sitting on them and you're not moving, I think the more sore and the more tight you're going to get. So they might not play that card, and they might get them out there, you know, for the last three or the last two. But I think to rest them for the up until the last game of the season, it's not going to be worth it.
And so speaking of injuries, what is the scoop and what is the story on Patrice? Upper body injury, but have they even, like, mentioned or what has leaked out there, what he's actually hurting or what's going on with him?
No, I have not seen anything on officially what they're saying it was. I mean, he's taken a couple good hits. Teams are just coming out here looking to hurt someone, and Bergeron's just been the target for everybody. So if I had to guess, it's got to be something in the shoulders, or maybe, you know, dead center in the chest. But everything else kind of seems a little off. I don't think it's anything to do with his arms or a wrist. It's definitely got to be something from taking so many checks and hard hits.
Brian, five games remain in the regular season. They win three out of five. They set the record for most wins in a season, with Detroit, eclipsing Detroit in 95-96. Of course, the Tampa Bay Lightning in 2018 and 2019, and they also 8 points away from breaking the record for total points in the season at 132. And Montgomery, about a week ago probably, maybe a little bit, I can't remember the time frame, he said, you know what, we're just focused. We're just going to focus on the postseason. I'm paraphrasing here. But later on, he kind of did a 180 and said a couple of days ago that he kind of embraces the fact that they're going to maybe go for this record. Your thoughts on that, and how much of the Bruins should be concerned about going for these records? And quite frankly, again, I'm going to use that word distraction. Can it be distracting to this team to focus on that?
I think some definitely think it's a distraction, and, you know, it's not that important. But the more I sat and really thought about it, the more it really seems like this team wants to win no matter what. So, like, these guys are hurting, and, you know, there's only a couple of games left. They could break the record, but they might have to start a couple guys that aren't quite the guys they want out there for these last two games. It's just going to show determination to win, and that's going to say something to the locker room, and it's going to say something to the league. So if you're going to go for it, you got to do it full steam ahead, and I think that's what these guys are looking to do. They want to win. They're out there every night to win.
And the only way to do it is together, and that's how you're going to win the cup. So might as well just go for it now.
So, Ryan, I'm going to go on the Eastern Conference question here. So out of Florida, the Islanders, and Pittsburgh, all 78 games, all 1 point separating all three of them, which team do you see as the odd man out in the wild card standings?
I think right now, and I said it a few weeks ago, I think Florida takes the spot. Mm-hmm. I think that we're looking at a tired Pittsburgh team that's just kind of been falling apart as of the last 3 years or so. I think this is just the beginning of the end for this team. And, you know, not as good of a season as Florida hoped for, but if they can get into that wild card spot, they're still, a sneaky threat for everybody.
And, Ryan, you mentioned Pittsburgh. They lost to New Jersey last night. 1 point back of the second wild card now with games versus Minnesota, Detroit, Chicago, and Columbus. But this is the first year in a long time. I did a little stat digging where Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin have literally played every game up to the season up to date in 78 games. That hasn't happened a lot in either of their careers. So what's gone wrong for the Pittsburgh Penguins this year? Is it, like you just said, they're getting a little old in the tooth? Is it goaltending? And we're looking at transition. But in a year where the two stars have played, I thought they'd be a little better, and they're not proving it or not down the short stretch here.
So I think definitely goaltending attributes to that. But when these guys are out, it gives the other guys on the team that are on the second or third line that chance to shine. And if they have the ability to say, all right, I'm going to hop in here and I'm going to fill that gap of Sidney Crosby, or I'm going to fill that gap of Malkin. It gives them that juice, and then they just start producing. So I'm thinking now it's more of a depth problem than it is, Crosby and Malkin producing points like they are.
Oh, come on. Dan Heinen's not your all-star on that team? No.
Tough to lose him, but now, seeing where we're going,
No, the real question that I know is, so we're picking the Penguins, they're old, they're long in the tooth. Do you see the Bruins, if they don't sign enough guys this year, going in the same direction as Pittsburgh? We've got an older crew. We can't let too many guys go. I know I'm looking past this year, but it's like you said, you can't just be rentals because you paid a lot of money for rentals. Bertuzzi, Olof, Hathaway. All these guys you picked up all can walk at the end of the year. So do you think he will let everybody walk, or do you think they'll make an honest effort to get at least as many guys under contract as possible?
I think, after the playoffs and the cup this year, it's going to be a busy off season. They're going to try and make things work. They definitely want to keep these guys around. You want to keep at least two of the three pickups, and I don't know who you'd want to lose out of those. You lose Bertuzzi or do you lose Hathaway? But looking down the line, if these older guys are starting to phase out and they retire, the Providence Bruins are absolutely stacked. Like these guys that they're calling up they're ready to go. You got, Jacob Lauko, you got Jack Achan down there. You've actually got some pretty good goaltending down there too. So I don't think there's any cause to worry for the future of the Bruins.
Ryan Dresser, our old-school podcast, NHL Insider, joins us here on the Going Old School show. Chips and Joe here for you on April 5th of 2023, 7:13 p.m. Eastern Time. Ryan, Buffalo Sabres, that was a tough loss to Florida last night. That was an interesting game going in. Buffalo struggled as of late, seemed to be out of the playoffs, fighting back the last four or five games. Think they're a little too young for the moment. Maybe they can't grasp it. But if you're a Buffalo fan, this team could be really good in a few years. Don't you think?
Oh, 100%. The push that they made this year just goes to show that they're definitely going to be a threat when these guys come through and size up. Like, you got so many young guys on that team. You have Owen Power. He's in talks for top rookie right now. He's just an absolute unit out there. And once that guy gets a little bit bigger and played a few NHL seasons, it's going to be a tough, tough Sabres team. And I think that, the Buffalo area needs that team to be good. And I think that they have that team now.
Speaking of up-and-coming teams, at least they were up and coming up until this year. It seemed like they're not playing up to potential. What has happened to the Toronto Maple Leafs? I mean, you look at them and like they've had an okay year, but you look at what they've got for talent. I think you would have expected more out of this team than what you're getting.
I think that happens more often than not with Toronto. They start off hot, and then it's just mediocre play after that. Mitch Marner was on absolute fire at the start of the year, and he's kind of tailed off. They lost Ryan O'Reilly for a bit, but he's actually slotted to come back tomorrow night against the Bruins. So I just don't know about this team anymore. Like, you want them to win in the first round, and then after that, do you care if they keep going? But they just got to at least get past the first round. It's been tough skating for them. Not very good in the last 10 games. So just kind of failing and crumbling around what they're trying to build, and just can't seem to get the right pieces to click here.
And Ryan, you mentioned Toronto, and they're in town tomorrow night. And I think that's if they're going to treat this game like a playoff atmosphere. First of all, I think they're going to send a message. I want your thoughts on that. And how important is the performance of them, whether they win or lose, to their psyche tomorrow night with what you just said about this team? I think it's a real big test for them. If they show up, play well, gives them a little boost. This team's looking for anything to grasp onto to get to the postseason and get, like we've talked about, that unimaginable playoff series win. The team needs to know how to win as a franchise. But just looking towards tomorrow night, pretty important game for that organization.
I think it's definitely as important to the Bruins as it is to Toronto. I mean, a win tomorrow is a solidifier in breaking the record. Gives you one more game closer to getting there. And beating Toronto just kind of shoves it right in their face before the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that, you know, is going to anger them, which they might kind of need. But again, with the injuries, if you are assuming that Krejci's not going to play tomorrow night because he left practice early, and that Hall's not going to play tomorrow either, if it's a close game and Boston ends up losing, it's still not a great look for Toronto, who has most of their pieces with them. So as long as it's a close game, I think either way, it's a win for the Bruins.
Mm-hmm. So over the last five games, do you see Omar getting more rest and Swayman playing basically three out of five or four out of five? I know it's a double-edged sword there, because do you really want to give Omar any rest prior and get him cold going to the playoffs? But you see him just give him a couple extra days rest, seeing he's going to be our number one in the playoffs?
I think, you know, giving him an extra game off would be good. I don't think any more than that, because they don't have any more back-to-back. So they have a few days off between games, which is good. So even if they do, you know, a back-to-back with Swayman starts, I think that's more than enough rest for Ullmark to be ready for the postseason. And again, that is if he is going to be the starting goaltender come round one.
Ryan, you mentioned
pretty
the game.
Clear, he will be.
Yeah. Ryan Jurassic joined us here on the Going Old School. Ryan, three really good games tonight. I'll start with the one in the East, Tampa Bay and the Rangers. And you talk about the Lightning. We talked about them last time we spoke on the show. They were floundering. Cooper basically said, you guys go out and see if you can beat on the Bruins, and maybe you guys can get your head out of you know what, and we'll play well. They did lose that game, but since they did that, they're 3-0, and they've outscored their opponents 14-1 in three games. Again, is this that team that you can't kill them, you can't shove them in the dirt, and they keep climbing up like a zombie would? Is there any reason to think that this Tampa Bay team can sort of pull their bootstraps to get in and flip a switch?
I think that they definitely have the ability to. We've seen it happen year after year. But, I mean, they got a tough schedule. They got a back-to-back starting tonight. They got the Rangers, who is going to be, you know, is a playoff team and they may have to face. And the Islanders, same thing, another playoff team, a wild card team. But to catch two New York teams back-to-back, that's just as dreaded as catching two Florida teams back-to-back. So it's definitely going to test them. And if they can come out on the other side of this one, 2-0, then I would look out for the Lightning.
Well, the other thing about the Lightning, Ryan, is you look at the Lightning, they've got the second-best record home-wise. It may not be great on the road, only 18-19, but They're 27-7-5 at home. So that's a team, if they have home ice advantage, obviously, except for Toronto above them and Boston, is like they could be a team to reckon with.
Oh, for sure. I mean, if they get past the first round with Toronto, they more than likely are going to have a really tough second round. So, I mean, when it comes to the wins late in the season, I think this team needs every win that they can get so that they can build that bankroll and they can get excited for the postseason, knowing that they're on a little streak right now and they want to keep it hot.
Ryan Durst joined us here on the Going Old School show. Ryan, Winnipeg, Calgary, and Nashville, a real good battle for the final wild card spot. Two of them face off tonight. Nashville with a big win over Las Vegas last night, but the game tonight with Winnipeg and Calgary, if you're a hockey fan, that's going to be exciting. Just any playoff, it's a de facto playoff game, in my opinion. Yours?
Oh, absolutely a playoff game. This is going to, you know, tie it for the wild card spot. If you're looking at points percentage, I think it still goes to Winnipeg, but it's still a big win for Calgary if they can get away with this one. And for Winnipeg, I think if you can get Connor Hellebuyck in his own head, and if he can lose a couple in a row, then it's going to be a steady decline for them.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, this year, obviously, Colorado hasn't had the year they had last year, but they've still got 98 points, 46 wins. Do you see them being a force to reckon with in the Western Conference? Because, I mean, look, everything starts with a clean slate. You think this team can make another solid run at the Cup?
I think if they can sneak away with first in the Central, they have a great shot of making it out of the first. And I think once they get out of the first round, I would step out of their way. They're going to be a wagon of a team. They're still missing their top guy. He's been out all season. I think he's ready to go, but they're more or less just kind of waiting for the playoffs to start so he can just start fresh in the playoffs and be ready to go.
Right. Great duo goaltending in Ullmark and Swayman for the Bruins, but you look at a team like Minnesota out there with Fleury and Gustafson, arguably – you talk about tandems, probably the second best tandem in the league. But with a tandem like that, and you think with the long playoff run, this Minnesota team could make some noise in the playoffs.
Oh, definitely. And Fleury is one of my favorite goaltenders, no matter what team. I mean, as a Vegas fan, him being there for the first year was crazy. But a guy you want in the postseason has a lot of experience with Pittsburgh, with Vegas, and now going on with Minnesota. I think that tandem right there is going to be scary, especially when you're facing Fleury in the playoffs. He's just an acrobat out there, and no one can move quite like he does.
So I said it earlier this year, and I'll say it again. So what would it be? What would hockey be with a Las Vegas-Boston final when you got your old coach facing your old team? And a team that they didn't think would go anywhere without that coach, that would to me that would make a good finals. But what's your thought on that?
I think it would be an amazing finals, especially with that storyline going for it. But with Vegas being successful from the first season, and you know continuing onward from there, and Boston being as good as they are this season, and as well as their last 10 years, they've been you know steady going for playoffs. I think this is something that everyone wants to see. I think that, I mean, for me, I look at Vegas as more of the West Coast Bruins style. They a little bit heavier. They hit hard. They play a very close offensive game like the Bruins do, but we can attribute that to Cassidy. So to see them play against each other would be phenomenal for the game.
Ryan, final question, man. Thanks always for the time. David Pastrnak, 7 goals in a 4-game span, now has netted 56. How does Jim Montgomery handle this, his ice time in the next 5 games, to get him that record? And if you're David Pastrnak, how do you handle it?
I think Pastrnak's going to go out there business as usual. He might be a little bit hungry to score a goal now that he's, you know, really close to getting 60. But he's already got his 100 points. That's his own record right there, first time to 100. But let's keep it going. He's got that in the back of his head. Let's just keep going, see how many points I can get,
and be ready for the playoffs. But I think how you handle this is if you have the chance to get him out there more on the power play, you give him more power play minutes than you do 5-on-5, just to get him a little bit hotter, get that power play going, and get things figured out for the playoffs in that power play, which is still struggling.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that may be an ongoing topic as we go on further down the road. Ryan, thanks for your time as always, sir. I always appreciate it. Enjoy your conversation, and you're teaching me a lot about hockey, so I thank you for that education as well, sir. Ryan, always a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, man. Always a great time.
You bet.
Thanks, Ryan.
Ryan Dereska. Thanks, Ryan. That's Ryan Dereska. He is our old school insider on the NHL, and I like talking to this guy, Joe. I speak with him occasionally, even off the show, and I love the sport, but I'm not up to speed on it, and Ryan has certainly got me up to speed in a short time, but always good. And hey, let's bring this playoff season on, right? It's all about the playoffs with this team now. I'm looking forward to it. You know what I mean?
Well, playoff hockey is there's nothing better than playoff hockey because it's like, throw out the overtime, throw out the freaking shootouts, take them sudden death hockey, and nothing beats that than sudden death. I mean, you've seen in the last 3 years with double overtime, triple overtime. It's like, separates the men from the boys, as you can say, from playoff time.
Yeah, and you know, whenever the Bruins are in the playoffs and make a run with a good team, it's always exciting, obviously. And you talked about playoff hockey, and that stands for itself. But with what they're doing in this historic season and the pressure that's on them, it makes it that much more exciting because as this postseason progresses and they keep advancing, then you're talking about, and you'll hear more about it with each and every series win if they do, Joe, the fact that, you know, the verge of being the greatest, I'm not going to say the greatest team ever, but you could certainly make a case for they will be having the greatest ever hockey season by any hockey team to ever lay skates. And that's what's going to be real interesting about this unique year.
Well, the good thing going for the Bees this year is they have depth on the roster. A couple injuries aren't going to kill them. Look, they've definitely got depth on the blue line, and they got depth at forward. So it's like, you know, they can swap in and out, and injuries aren't going to totally kill them. So I think this year the depth will, and you definitely need it running through the playoffs because you just can't. Who can stay healthiest? The healthiest team usually you can stay the healthiest will win it all because you depend on everybody and then just how healthy you can stay. So that's why these last five games, managing the workload, making sure these guys are healthy enough to play, that's the key to Montgomery playing. It's just like, it's just keep these guys healthy and on the right track, right focus, somehow stop these teams because these teams, like you said, are just taking runs like at Bergeron and that. They're taking liberties on these guys, and it's like, so, you know, square up this power play, make teams pay for it, and that's how you stop from teams taking runs at your players.
Yeah, that's it, and we'll see what happens there. Toronto comes into town tomorrow night and Saturday, Sunday, back-to-back. New Jersey's in town, then they go to Philadelphia before they finish the season next week against Washington at Montreal as well. Joe Fearn, Johnny Sunchips here on the Going Old School Show, live on blogtalkradio.com. If you want to join us, 515-602-9730 for the next 30 minutes or so. But, Joe, let's move on to Major League Baseball, specifically the Boston Red Sox, who were swept today by the Pittsburgh Pirates and get some takeaways after five games. And just off the surface, I'll let you start first, and I'll give you my major takeaway just being six games into the season where they're at 2-4.
Major takeaway from the first five games is your biggest nightmare came true. Everybody was worried about the pitching staff. Well, those worries came to fruition in five games. Corey Kluber is not a number one starter for one. Mm-hmm. Chris Sale is not number two starter for two. They're good three, four starters, but they're not. Right now we have nobody picking up the slack. We need Belo and we need Whitlock to come back. Whitlock's about a week out. Belo is probably by a couple of weeks. Get these two guys back in the rotation and at least kick Kluber and Sale down. Look, Crawford's not a bona fide major league starter. Sorry, I'm not, you know. Reddick's a good number four, number five. The offense, look, it'll take care of itself. They're not going to score nine runs every game, but the pitching staff has been brutal. I mean, starters haven't done anything, and the back half of the bullpen hasn't been the greatest. So what could go wrong has gone wrong for this pitching staff. So you hope to get it somewhat right, because if not, we're going to be struggling for the 78 wins this year.
Yeah, that's my biggest takeaway, is they're pitching, specifically starting, and we knew that this is going to be an issue. I mean, Chris Sale, granted it's one start, and you can say, well, it's only one start, but this is not the normal Chris Sale. This is the Chris Sale hasn't been good since 2018, for God's sakes. We haven't seen him that much, so we can't really give him the benefit of the doubt and say, you know what, maybe he'll be okay, because if something's not right. And we may be looking at the Chris Sale and the real Chris Sale. You know, maybe not to the point of a 21 ERA, which he now stands going into the game against Detroit tomorrow. But again, this is my biggest takeaway going into the season. You were looking at Chris Sale, as being the savior. That's red flag number one. Okay? Then you have Corey Kluber come in, who's a strikeout pitcher, not a number one, walking a lot of guys. Is he going to be okay? I think he'll be fine. But can he carry the show as a number one? No. Carter Crawford, a 15.75 ERA. Nick Pivetta can get it done, but it goes in spurts. Two homers in five innings last night. Their team stats in ERA going into today pitching-wise were, in ERA, they were 29th in all of baseball. They've walked 22 guys going into today. That was 24th in all of baseball. And going into today, they gave up 12 homers. And, oh, by the way, teams are 14 out of 14 in stolen base attempts. Now, Joe, you'll agree with me with this. That could be partly to blame on the catcher as well. But suffice it to say, and again, it's early on, but it's not like they have an ace at the top of their staff where we're going to rely on a guy out there. Your Brian Bayouts are out there. Your Garrett Whitlocks are out there. But those guys are guys building for the future. Can they be catching in a bottle? Yeah. They'll be your guys for the future. But again, it's no ace with this team. And I'm not surprised by how badly this staff looks six games, because it's magnified and their offense doesn't produce. And that's what's happened against the Pittsburgh team.
Well, the good thing about so far after Chris Sale's first start, all TVs have been safe and all clubhouses have been kept intact. So, you know, that's a good thing. The catcher, Ryan, we all knew that McGuire was not the catcher of the future. And it's like, so Wong's not the catcher. So we didn't show up that. But, you know, this blocking basement Tampa Bay Rays mentality has to go. It's like, this is Boston. Mr. Bloom, this is Boston. Go out and get us bona fide players. You can't wait for these guys down in AAA to make their way up, because Boston fans aren't going to put up with it. And definitely, you have another year, you end up in the basement, and you're going to have an angry mob on Boylston Street by the end of the year.
Well, I think a part of me, I never root for the Red Sox to lose, but you know my feelings on Chaim Doom. I want him out of here. I wanted him out yesterday. And I think it's his season. It's a make or break. But look at this Red Sox team and tell me if you're really surprised. They spend money, and John Henry was never afraid to spend money up until the last couple of years. Right now, going into the season, the Boston Red Sox are 14th in Major League payroll, right? Their payroll this season, according to SpotRack.com, is $167.5 million. You know what the league average is? $148.6 million. They are $17 million above the league average. And I haven't looked up the stats yet, but I will guarantee this. The last time that's happened with this team is last century. And that's the difference. And you can say, well, they're right ahead of Colorado, and the White Sox are ahead of them, and the San Francisco and Houston's ahead of them, and Texas, and the Dodgers and so on. That's not what it's about, fans. It's about the Boston Red Sox are known for spending money. You can't compare them to other teams. When you do that, you get what you pay for. And that's what they're getting, what they're paying for. And if you keep Heimblum in his position for a few more years, they're going to sink lower on the chart of payroll. And that's my fear.
What gets me aggravated, John, is like he sat there and he's like, he used to sit, growing up, he used to hear that the Red Sox can't compete with Steinbrenner. They can't spend that kind of money. That's BS. Look, they got the television contract. They got the Major League Baseball contract.
Yep.
You've got lots of money coming in. There's no way in hell you can't keep up with the New York Yankees spending money. You've got the money. You've got the resources. Why are we becoming cheap? And like I said, Boston fans will not put up with it. You want to be cheap and throw pieces out there, it's not gonna hold water with these fans. These fans are going to revolt. Look, you may have had four championships in the last 20-some-odd years. Doesn't matter. They still want more. It's like we're not satisfied with just that amount of wins. The fans can't be satisfied. You have a – used to say this about the Rays. You have a 4A pitching staff right now. That
yeah.
doesn't even belong in the major leagues. It belongs in somewhere between AAA and major leagues because none of these guys – it's like that is a – that is total joke, and that's an embarrassment to Boston Red Sox pitching of yesteryear that you toted out this starting rotation. I mean, it just – the Pittsburgh Pirates just swept you. The Pittsburgh Pirates don't even spend money, and they swept your butts for the first time since 2018 that swept a team in their home park. That says it all.
Exactly. And you look at a guy like Brian Reynolds, hey, Red Sox, how does his ass taste? He came in and torched you. And John Tomasi had a nice piece, if you want to go on NBCSportsBoston.com, about how Brian Reynolds didn't get his contract extension or didn't get a pump and pay or something to that matter. But, you know, he may be a guy the Red Sox would be interested in because he's, I guess in the article, he mentioned how he enjoyed his time here in Boston. How could you after going by going 7 of 12 with 3 homers, 5 RBIs, and 5 runs scored? But you talk about Brian Reynolds owning Fenway. That's a guy you might want to look at. And a Pittsburgh Pirate team, Joe, let's face it, Carlos Santana there, the kid O'Neill Cruz, those pitchers were throwing some smoke over the past 3 games starting. And that's not a bad team. And I know you've had an affinity for them for a long time. But if you're an average baseball fan, Joe, and you'll appreciate this, how is a Pirates on a bad team to root for? We're owning for the underdog. But you're talented.
Sorry. Look, I know you think I have an infinity. I just want to see Pittsburgh back to relevancy of the days of the 70s where they were bookends champions in the 70s, 71, and 79. And that's a proud franchise that has been decimated by an owner who refuses to spend money. But you put in a brand-new center field scoreboard. Oh, but you won't sign Brian Reynolds, who is a bona fide up-and-coming baseball star. Maybe not a true Mike Trout-type star, but he's still got he's a five-tool player who's an excellent player, would be a great cornerstone going forward with O'Neill Cruz. But too many times Pittsburgh has seen the guys and then just let them walk away. You can't. Baseball would be better with Pittsburgh with a better team. Let's face it. Baseball would be so much better.
Joe, you sounded like an emotional, frustrated Pirate fan. Yes? Come on,
man.
Come on, this is 2 years in the making. Come out of that Pirate closet.
I'm just a true baseball fan. I just love the game. It's like, you know, you get aggravated when teams like that just sit there, and it's like the Harry Sindons of the world have a lot of brothers in baseball, too. And it's like, you know, and Heimblum, I nothing would make it better than having a painful 60-win season in Boston, because then Bloom would have no choice but to walk out the door and get somebody else in here. Please get somebody else in here.
And you know what the kicker is? And we'll keep at it. And if you guys out there ever want to call the show 515-602-9730 and tell me if you hear the same affinity in Joe's voice for the Pittsburgh Pirates, you're more than welcome to call today or any other Wednesday that week, because I'm going to make it a mission now. A couple of years ago, I don't know if some of the oldest were here, but Joe kept dropping lines about the Pirates and this day in Pirates history, which he could bring back, but I think this is the year Joe is actually going to finally admit that. And Joe, you don't have to respond to this because I know deep down in your heart who you're really affinity for, but I think this is the year where you're going to finally just admit it, man. It's okay. You can like two teams. You can actually have two favorite teams, if you will, but be that as it may, we'll digress. But Joe, you know what the funny thing is? And if you're a Sox fan, it's going to grind your gears. You have a team in the Bronx, you know, 220 miles south of here, that is, and granted they haven't won to see a World Series, but you know what they do? They spend money and stock their farm system, and that is the New York Yankees, and they are doing it to a T. And they were the evil empire, and we are the guy, we are the evil stepchild, because if the Yankees are getting it done on both ends of the both ends of that spectrum, but even though they haven't won a World Series since, they're doing it the right way. And if you're a Boston fan, that's got to perturb you a little bit.
Oh, it just drives you nuts. You sit there and it's like, you see year in, year out, they spend money, they keep on spending money, because it's like eventually, if they throw enough crap at the wall with these signings, they're eventually going to stick. And they're not afraid to make mistakes with signings. And just, oh, sign somebody else. You know what? You got to keep on trying. Like, so you got to give them credit. And look, their farm system hasn't lacked or hasn't slacked over the years. So it's like, you know, they've had ups and downs like every other team out there. But right now it's like, you know, Volpe, and everybody thinks that kid's the next Derek Jeter. But, I mean, he started off well. We'll see what it is by the end of the year. But still, that's just another guy in the farm system that came through their system. And it's like, you know, that was the key to their 90s run and early 2000s run was the farm system. So if they can get their farm system back in gear, then the evil empire will be strong and they'll overtake the Houston Astros if their farm system can keep bringing up good players.
That's the kryptonite. Once they get by Houston, I think that, like you said, that's a plateau right now where if the Yankees take on Houston, be it regular season, especially in the playoffs, that Houston team just owns you mentally. And that's the one thing they have to get over. And I think that's why they bolstered this pitching staff to get Gerrit Cole some help. So we'll talk a lot more baseball on the show. We're going to talk a little Patriots in just a minute. There's about 17 minutes left on the show, but I want to debut a segment that I take to heart every week, and it's starting this week on the show. I haven't named it yet, so for the sake of the show today, it's going to be the shortstop stat comparison between your Boston Red Sox shortstops and the San Diego Padres starting shortstop, and that is one and only Xander Bogaerts. And I love watching the Padres. He's fitting in really well. I've seen some of the outtakes wearing the San Diego State University outfits. They like him there, getting good reception. And oh, he's batting cleanup. So just for craps and giggles, and to start this off after week one, I'm going to give you the Red Sox starting shortstops to date stats versus Xander Bogaerts. And let's start with the Boston Red Sox, okay? Enrique Hernandez didn't play today, but yesterday versus the Pittsburgh Pirates, he went 0 for 4, struck out twice, batting 7th in the lineup. His season to date, Enrique Hernandez, your shortstop, batting 176, 2 homers, 3 RBIs, 2 walks, and an 829 OPS. Let's go west, shall we? To San Diego, California. Xander Bogaerts, batting 4th for the San Diego Padres. They don't play today. Yesterday versus Arizona, he went 2 for 4 with a homer, 2 RBIs, scored 2 runs. Xander Bogaerts on the season is hitting 409 with 3 homers, 7 RBIs, 3 doubles, and a 1.395 OPS. This is going to be an ongoing theme with me. Just for fun, I love Xander, and I love watching the Padres, and it's just a little fun poking fun at the Red Sox because I really think they missed the boat on this guy. And you put him in a lineup that has bats around him. Everyone talked about Xander last year, the past couple of years. Maybe he's losing it. Is he hurt? He's not the guy, not the power guy. Put him in a lineup with talent around him, Joe, and look what's happened, albeit only 5 games in.
Well, look, I agree with you. It's like the San Diego Padres are loaded with plays, and it's like, we should have had that shortstop. We should have had is a good major league ball player, but he's not a bona fide shortstop in major league baseball. It's going to come back and haunt us when you let a guy, a homegrown talent that's as good as he is, you let a homegrown talent just walk. Why? Because you were too cheap, and you slapped him in the face last year with a big-time under as far as contract, and you expected him to take a hometown discount again, and you can't expect that out of every player. Too many guys have walked out the door because you refused to pay them.
I agree. It's ongoing, and you're right. And not even that. It's the guy in the clubhouse, and we talked about it. We're not going to get too much into it. This is going to be an ongoing segment from me on our show, and we'll see if I can kind of spur Joe to get his love for the Pittsburgh Pirates out in the open. We'll find a crevice. We'll find a little crack under the door. We can get him to come out and tell us how much he loves the We Are Family Bucks. Anyway, all right, Joe. Again, football just doesn't go away, right? It's becoming a soap opera. Go ahead.
No, football's not going away, and this soap opera of Bill Belichick Jones is going to be a deterrent for this year. And, you know, there was a stat brought out today on radio that the Chuck Knowles of the world, the Don Shulas of the world, the great coaches of the world, and you looked at how many years between the last playoff victories and that of all these great coaches, and is Bill Belichick heading down that same road? Because, you know, he's getting stuck in the rut now. It's been 3 years, 4 years. So how many more years does he have when you can't keep on hanging the fact that we've won since 2001? But the last 4 years, we've done nothing. You can't keep on resting on their laurels, because once you do that, it's over. It's totally over. And you've driven a wedge that is as big as a Grand Canyon between you and your starting quarterback. So when does the rift between Mr. Robert Kraft and Mr. Bill Belichick make front page news? Because Kraft loves Mac Jones, and Bill seems like, the more he goes, the more he's got issues with Mac Jones.
Well, if you look at Mike Florio's report on ProFootballTalk.com, he talked about the tension between Jones and the coach, and Jones apparently went outside the organization to seek help with the offense last year. And that kind of ticked Bill off. And according to Florio, and you can choose to believe him or not, he's floated stuff out there before. But apparently Bill Belichick has shot Jones during this offseason. So I guess what I'm trying to say, and again, where this smoke, this fire, and we know these two players don't get it, and we looked at a wasted year last year, Joe, with bringing the defensive coaches to coach the offense, and I'm not down on Jones for seeking help outside the organization, because you know how Bill is. It gave him a hair across his ass, so to speak. I guess what I'm trying to say is, right now, it would not shock me at all if Mac Jones does not be in a Patriot uniform come the fall.
Wouldn't shock me. And look, everybody's in Bill, we trust. And, you know, we talked to Mr. Howard Balzer during the year, and he said you can't blame Bill. Everybody wants to blame Bill first. Well, sometimes you can, because you can't be old school forever. The game changes. Players change. The kids' mentality, the Gen Zs of the world change. Their mentality, it's not what it used to be in the 70s and 80s. You can't just bully and downgrade. There's ways to bring out the best in your quarterback, and Bill's going to change his way to get his best out of Mac Jones. You know, this just, you can't do knock your guy down and expect him to get up like they used to. It just, plays aren't built like that anymore. The mentality isn't built like that. This kid has come from winning teams and basically been coddled his whole freaking career. So it's like it's a best, both of them are at fault, but now Bill needs to be the better man. He's the coach, and straighten this out. Will he? Can he? Yes.
No,
will he? I don't know.
I don't think he will.
No, because he's too stubborn in his ways.
Yep.
At 61, to change his ways. Well, you know what? Then the game has passed you by.
So if he doesn't change his ways, I guess there's no alternative but to trade him, right? And can you see these two going through another year with all this tension? Even if you bring a new offensive coordinator, I just wonder if it's too far damaged to be repairable, Joe. That's my biggest concern about this. And again, I'm going to harken back to last year because you wasted that year with the coaches and you didn't know what you had in Mac Jones. And we may never find out because it's so damaged to what he can be in a Patriot uniform. All we're going to say is, well, he would have, could have, should have been. It's going to be that empty set, that unknown quantity that you may have had when it's all said and done, because I don't think they can go through another year of doing the same thing. And that's my fear again. And I think it should be every Patriot fan's fear. You know, what happens 6 games into the year when you realize it's all damaged? It's irreparable then. Then it's just another long season for a Patriot fan.
Well, what if the scenario that was floated out there today, Mr. O'Brien is allowed the reins and control of Mac Jones, and it's just between him and Mac Jones, and you run the offense,
mm-hmm.
and you have Bill O'Brien as the in-between. It could work if Bill Belichick allows that to be a middleman in between him and Mac, and just to, like, lay off. Let Bill O'Brien come in here, do what he was meant to do, and that's run the offense, be an offensive coordinator. If they do that, you can survive the year. You can get by with the year. Maybe even get Mac Jones to grow. But I'm with you. You can't wait to 6 games in, and if it's a train wreck, then you just got another wasted year, and you just wasted your rookie contract on BS. And then you're going to start all over again. Now you got to find yourself a quarterback again.
Yeah.
And look how long it took Miami, Buffalo, and the rest of the division to find their quarterback. The Jets are still looking.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. What we laughed at and what we joked about all these years while Tom was around is now what the Patriots are. And it's like, it's not fun.
I agree. And again, it's like, and I guess when you started your half of the conversation about talking about Bill O'Brien getting all the reins, if it comes down to Bill Belichick, who oversees everything until it changes, I just can't see Bill O'Brien getting maybe the final say on everything. And it may last a little bit, Joe, but again, it comes down to Belichick and his persona. He is who he is. He is the way he is, and that's a stubborn guy who marches to the beat of his drum, as he heard that, you know, talking about the fans about a week ago, and he pissed off every fan saying, why should they have faith in you and this and that? And I'm paraphrasing again, but he said because of 25 years. And noting the fact that he's thinking about the body of work when, in essence, it's about the last 3 years if you're a fan and you're an organization. The past is the past. It's a great 20 years. But what's gone on with this team the past three? And it's trending in the wrong direction.
3 years is a trend that, like, you can't use it as an excuse anymore, because when it starts getting to 3, 4, 5 years, there's no more excuses. Stop rolling out the excuses, and you've got to do something to change it. If you can't change it, back to the 70s Patriots, where once in a blue moon you'll have a good year, and the rest of the time you'll be floundering around 500, and it's like, I'm not looking forward to it. I don't want to see it. So please, please, straighten it out and try to get something. Now, it all depends on what Robert Kraft, how much patience does he have? Does he have the balls to pull the trigger and let him go? I don't think he does.
Yeah.
But he may have to, because don't be an owner saying that you are looking out for the best interest of your season ticket holders when you're letting this go on underneath your reign. So the bottom line is the pocket and how much money's coming in. If all of a sudden season ticket holders don't want to be season ticket holders, it may send the signal to Robert Kraft. I don't know if that's enough, but time will tell.
There's one way, you talked about the fans and the season ticket holders, and you got to appease those, the business that he runs over there, Patriot Place. There's one way that you cure everything, and you get those fans to believe again, and that's a go sign, you're Lamar Jackson. That's it. Whether you like him or not, you get a big name at quarterback, because if it doesn't work out with Jones, and I don't think it's going to, quite personally, because of the rift between them, you go get a guy like him, again, it establishes credibility at the position. Obviously, he's not a Pat Mahomes. He is a quarterback I think could really make your offense dynamic, and that's the one way you immediately turn this offense around, Joe.
Well, he's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Josh Allen either, but he is a top-tier quarterback that has proven that he can play in this league. And, yeah, he would instant credibility to that offense, instant. And the offense could be better. But Juju Smith-Schuster and him and the running game that we have, tight ends that we have, because you know how much Lamar loves his tight end. Hunter Henry could be his man, could be his boy. Yeah, it could change it around quickly. So go out and sign him. Give up what you got to give up and just get him in here.
And I think Florio in his article listed the Las Vegas Raiders, the Houston Texans, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Washington Commanders as potential destinations, noting Josh McDaniels' Raiders as a team to, quote, unquote, keep watching. And the Raiders did a couple of things recently, right? Danny Amendola's on the coaching staff. Brian Hoyer has been signed as a backup. So it's Patriots out west, and that's a destination where I could see whether he wants to trade him there or not, Belichick and the Patriots brass. But you look at Mac Jones with Josh McDaniels, that'd be pretty interesting, Joe.
That Hoyer leaving and signing with Vegas is the only red flag you need to see, because Brian Hoyer was the unwritten coach on that team in the quarterback's room. So for him to leave willingly and go sign with Josh tells you all you need to know of what's going on in that Patriot locker room with Bill. He's lost the locker room. That Brian Hoyer, who is more than content to be a quote coach/player, and he went to with Josh McDaniels, your ex-offensive coordinator. All you need to know.
Well, I think part of the reasoning was, as in the last 2.5 minutes in the show, Brian Hoyer spoke out about the coaches, about the coaching staff and sort of like the dynamic there and the mishandling of it. He kind of made reference to it, and that was the impetus for shipping him out. Not surprised, right? If you're not one of Bill Belichick's boys, time to go.
And that's why, look, you know me, I love Bill, and Bill we trust, but it's slowly but surely looking like the game has passed him by. And he needed Tom, and Tom somewhat needed him here. But maybe it's right. It's fine. People said that he couldn't survive without Tom. Well, he hasn't survived without Tom yet, so he's going to prove something sooner or later.
Well, Joe, that's going to do it. Any final thoughts in the minute and a half we left?
Well, it's been a good hour. Thank you, Ryan, for the time hockey-wise. It was good. We'll hopefully see JC next week and get some wrestling talk in next week on our show. It's great. And other than that, had a good show.
Yeah, we would have talked a lot more wrestling, but I wanted you guys and JC to be here. So hopefully he's back next week because – you know, we'll see we'll kind of talk about the transformation from the McMahon family and the business known as the WWE. So when we get all the guys together, specifically you two, we'll venture down that road. But until then, Joe, it's been great talking to you, and always a pleasure, man. We'll talk real soon, buddy. Take care.
All right. John, have a good one. People, have a good day, good night, and we'll talk next Wednesday.
You got it. Going to do it here on the Going Old School show, live on blogtalkradio.com. Follow our Old School podcast page on facebook.com. Throw in your comments. Invite if you want to invite friends. We welcome that as well. We'll be back next week, again, on Wednesday, three of us, for the Going Old School show. Again, we'll have Ryan DiResta, our NFL insider, NHL insider, pardon me, on our show next week, as well as a Bruins close out the season next week and venture into the playoffs and all things NHL. But until then, for Joe Forand, this is Johnny Sunchips. Have a great night, everybody, and we'll talk to you later on. Be well, be safe, enjoy your Easter weekend.